Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen. I'm joined today by Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell and our new Corridor news readers Chloe Weinstein, Simone Otley, and Jaya Francis. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Christina Laurie about a meeting that will discuss the future of Lemoyne Point.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca.
Public meeting to discuss future of Lemoyne Point Farm. A public meeting is being hosted on Tuesday to discuss the future of Lemoyne Point Farm. Lemoyne Point Farm is an 82-acre property just south of the Lemoyne Point Conservation Area, a prime waterfront location that is host to sustainably managed local farmland and various other features which support a huge amount of biodiversity. The passing of previous owner, Mary Fraser, in April 2022 has left the Lemoyne Point Farm in limbo. Mary's friends have stated that she wanted the farm to be conserved and protected from development. With concerns that the farm could be up for sale any day now, the seven-member group Save Lemoyne Point Farm was formed. The group, along with their many supporters, including No Clear Cuts Kingston, the Land Conservancy for Kingston, Turtles Kingston, The Tragically Hip, and Loving Spoonful, aims to preserve the farm fields, meadows, forest, shoreline, and all that makes up the stunning site. The group is hoping that the City of Kingston will purchase the land and preserve the site. This Tuesday, the group is opening up the floor to all interested community members to share their ideas for the future of the farm. Jim B.I.G., a member of the Save Lemoyne Point Farm group, states, quote, "We want to hear people's ideas for the property. We believe that it is important to conserve this farmland and waterfront so close to the heart of the city. We are inviting people to join us to imagine its best future," end quote. The meeting is set to include an overview of the farm's history, the current zoning laws and land restrictions, as well as brainstorming amongst attendees and opportunities to share ideas for the future of the farm. BIG states, quote, "We're hoping the meeting is full of people bringing their ideas and curiosity. We will report back on what we hear. Let's see how we can make dreams become a reality," end quote. The public meeting will be held at Center 70 on Tuesday, January 9th from 6:30 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. Those interested in attending can register on Eventbrite.
Thank you, Chris. Over to Chloe Weinstein with her piece from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for YGK News, Owen Fullerton, about the Kingston Police Department's response to a controversial online post.
Thank you, Jesse. The Kingston Police have responded to a controversial image shared to the popular internet site Reddit. The image in question shows a Kingston police cruiser parked in an accessible parking spot at a McDonald's. The image quickly gained traction on the site and sparked discussion among Kingston residents. In response to the photo and the resulting criticism, Kingston police have released a statement saying that the image was captured during a police response to an emergency call in the area. In the written statement, the Kingston police claimed that the picture was taken during an active situation. The officer had parked the cruiser to enter the establishment to ask questions about a person of interest in the area. A 28-year-old was arrested and charged with two counts of theft under $5,000, two counts of breach of probation, and one count of mischief under $5,000. The post resulted in a debate over whether or not the emergency vehicle should be excused for parking in accessible space in case they need to quickly return to their vehicle to respond to a call. While Kingston police implied that there isn't a case in their statement, they noted that in this particular instance, it was in response to a call with the assumption that a suspect may be inside the restaurant. The person who posted the photo shared no context but explicitly stated that the officers were there strictly as customers, while other posters doubled down and said that they were at the McDonald's and witnessed the officers sitting down to eat, claiming that the photo was taken just a day before it was posted. However, Kingston Police's statement is completely at odds with that, and nobody claiming to have seen the vehicle has since refuted the statement. A big thank you to Owen Fullerton of YGK News for that story. And now, over to Dinah Jansen with a story from Local Journalism Initiative reporter for the Kingstonist, Michelle Dory Forstel, that details new Alzheimer's programming being offered in Napanee.
Thank you, Chloe. January is Alzheimer's Awareness Month. The Alzheimer's Society encourages individuals and organizations across Canada to learn more about dementia and its impacts on Canadians. Locally, the Kingston, Frontenac, Lennox, and Addington Alzheimer's Society offers support to individuals and families living with dementia. One such service provider is Lorraine Elder Ross. Ross has worked for the Alzheimer's Society for nearly 3 decades, and she has recently transitioned to her new role as the Education and Support Coordinator for the KFLNA branch in Napanee. Ross stressed that it is not necessary to have an official diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease or dementia to access the free support she provides. Ross stressed that early assessment and treatment is crucial and that individuals should seek help out sooner rather than later. Ross offers a weekly support group in Napanee every Thursday from 10:30 to 12 p.m. In February, the Napanee office will also begin offering a virtual support group specifically for children caring for their parents. Ross noted that her services are meant to answer questions and provide support and guidance, not just for those experiencing dementia, but also for their caregivers. Along with regular programming, Ross also has several exciting opportunities coming up for Alzheimer's Awareness Month. On Wednesday, January 24th at 1:30 p.m., Ross will host an information session at her Napanee office on the second floor of the Napanee Area Community Health Center. This special program for caregivers will be an opportunity to learn from a representative from the Community Advocacy and Legal Center. On Monday, January 29th, the Alzheimer's Society will host an Education Day for caregivers at Napanee's St. Mary Magdalene Anglican Church located at 137 Robinson Street from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Anyone from Lennox and Addington can participate in the special programs and there is no charge, but Ross emphasizes the need to register. If you're interested in attending either the January 24th or 29th events, you can register by calling the Kingston office at 613-544-3078 or emailing lross@alzking.com. That's lross@alzking.com. For more information on Alzheimer's disease, dementia, and services offered locally throughout the KFLNA, visit the Alzheimer's Society of Kingston, Frontenac, Lennox, and Addington website at alzheimer.ca/KFLNA. Thank you to Michelle Dory Forstell of the Kingstonist for that story. Coming up in our next segment is Jaya Francis with a story from Local Journalism Initiative reporter Keith Dempsey with the Brockville Recorder and Times about the creation of 44 new daycare spaces in Gananoque.
The United Counties of Leeds and Grenville, in partnership with the Town of Gananoque and the YMCA of Eastern Ontario, announced that 44 new affordable licensed infant, toddler, and preschool childcare spaces will be available in Gananoque by the end of 2024. The spaces are part of the broader Canada-wide Early Learning Childcare, otherwise known as CWELCC, in which the provincial government has committed to improving access to childcare by allocating funding to support the creation of 86,000 new affordable childcare spaces. Gananoque Mayor John Beddoes expressed his enthusiasm with this partnership. Beddoes noted that the creation of these new childcare spaces will help to address a childcare shortage in Gananoque. The current ratio of children to childcare spaces is 9-1. The province approved a directed growth strategy for Leeds and Grenville that will see 397 new affordable licensed infant, toddler, and preschool spaces being created across the region by the end of 2026. The 397 new childcare spaces will be in addition to the current 881 infant, toddler, and preschool, and 1,271 kindergarten/school-age center-based spaces, as well as 62 licensed home provider spaces currently operating in Leeds and Grenville. Thank you to Keith Dempsey of the Brockville Recorder and Times for that report. Now over to Simone Ollie with a piece from Local Journalism Initiative reporter Philip Blanchet from the Morrisburg Leader that details a residential tax increase in South Stormont.
Thank you, Jaya. South Stormont homeowners will see an increase in their residential taxes in 2024, as South Stormont Council voted to raise the residential tax by 9.5%. The 9.5% tax increase is the latest in a series of increases by South Stormont Council. Taxes increased by 5% in 2023, 3.99% in 2022, and 1.85% in 2021. A number of factors contributed to the sizable tax increase. In 2024, many smaller capital projects will be paid for by taxation rather than a lump sum 20-year debenture. South Stormont Chief Administrative Officer Debbie Lucas noted that previous budgets were supported by using debentures to fund capital projects. Lucas added that record high interest rates for borrowing impacted the decision to pay for capital work. Two major projects planned for this year will not have any impact on the budget. The demolition and remediation of the Raisin River Heritage Center in St. Andrews West has a budget of $800,000 and will be paid out of a reserve already funded for this purpose. The demolition of the landlocked building was delayed by legal challenges to try and save the building. The other project, a planned $2.9 million renovation to the Long Sioux Arena, will only move forward if a federal funding application is approved. Lucas explained that reserves left over funding via the Canada Community Building Fund, formerly known as the federal gas tax funding, will be used for the township's portion of the project if federal grant funding is approved. Only 48% of South Stormont's $20,735,503 budget is covered through taxation. The balance of the funding is made by fees, grants and investments, and land sales. After depleting $6 million from reserves in 2023, the township will fund 9% of its budget, $1.82 million, from reserves in 2024. The 2024 budget is the final year of a three-year multi-year budgeting period adopted by the previous term of South Stormont Council.
Thank you, Simone. And thank you to Philip Blanchet of the Morrisburg Leader for that story. We now move to a piece from Local Journalism Initiative reporter Ted Evans that covers the expansion of Loyalist Township's Food Cycler Program.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, Local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. Loyalist Township will be expanding the Food Cycler program by 100 units. This expansion will take advantage of grant funding from Impact Canada. The Economic Growth and Community Development Services Department at Loyalist Township presented Council with two options for the follow-up to the program. The first option was the expansion of 100 units, while the second option was a larger step looking to expand the program to 500 units. Councillor Lorna Willis moved to adopt recommendation number one. Along with the recommendation, Willis added some direction for staff.
I move to receive the report and adopt recommendation one, and further direct staff to develop a detailed feasibility study for further expansion that includes best practices from other municipalities, consideration of alternate units, including bulk solutions where appropriate, and a cost-benefit analysis, including what is the value of the extended life of landfills, and reduction in waste collection costs, and to consider funding options, including the Green Municipal Fund.
The motion was passed with only one councillor opposing. Councillor Carol Parks explained why she wasn't in favour.
I think now's the time to push this program forward. And based on that, I wouldn't be supporting it as it stands. I think there's an opportunity at this time to move forward with this.
Willis explained why she thought moving ahead with 500 units would just be too much.
I'm glad that this was a success for the trial. I spent a lot of time working in the field of sustainability and I get excited about these things. I am concerned that we're making a very big decision. We're talking about 500 units now, and that becomes a contract that's worth $145,000 or more.
Willis noted it would be a large commitment for the township based on just a short trial.
There are other companies that provide units that do the same thing. And there are, in fact, companies that provide units that create organic compost. So I'm just concerned that we're jumping into something that's a lot of money without having anything more than a six-month trial.
Engineering and Environment Manager Luke McDonald noted that the current units are very well rated.
It is a well-recognized brand and it is very well received. So there is some risk associated with going to an open tender where you might not necessarily get the same level of quality that you're getting. And you are asking the residents to put forward, depending on the unit, you know, $150 to $300. $50 of their own money. And without having trialed other units, it does present some concerns there that we would need to look at.
McDonald mentioned the current public interest in the program.
So at this time, our wait list is, I'll say, roughly 110. So that's everyone who's keen to be on the program right from the start, thereabouts. Aside from that, it's mostly just interest in what we've seen, social media, what we've heard from those who participated in the pilot project. So one of the survey questions that we did ask was, you know, would your neighbors be interested in a program like this? And the vast majority of people thought that it would be interested in expanding.
McDonald explained the geographical spread of the current participants.
We did have a good mix across the township. So there was residents from Amherst Island, there was all of our urban centers, Amherst View, Bath, Odessa, and rural. So it was mixed across the geography.
McDonald explained the breakdown of the funding from Impact Canada.
The $100 per unit subsidy that Impact Canada is providing is an average, where for the cheaper unit, they're providing a $50 subsidy, and the more expensive unit, they're providing $150.
McDonald looks ahead to the potential future of the program.
If we're looking at households across Loyalist Township as a whole, there's 7,000 to 8,000. And so we're trying not to expand the program too quickly without having more information to justify that by growing it. But if you look at uptakes of, you know, composting programs and things like that across, you know, larger municipalities with green bins, it's usually in that, say, 60% range. So we feel that this number is that sort of slow growth that we're looking for to gradually build the program and make sure that it isn't becoming that bread maker that sits on your counter.
Willis noted the benefits of more analysis on the program.
I think that this is a great step forward. I'm having trouble seeing how it goes out to 7,000 households in an economical manner. And before we jump to ordering 500 of them, I'd like to see a bit more analysis on what the benefit is to the township.
McDonald mentioned an instance in Canada where a large expansion went well for the community.
There is one instance in, I believe it was Nelson, BC, where they have launched a larger program of about 5,000 units. And so we are reaching out to them regarding lessons learned. They did some interesting things there where they made more accessible replacement parts like carbon filters and things like that, which is something that we're interested in because the easier we make this for residents, the more likely that this program is to stick.
Councillor Paul Proderick showed his support for the program.
I bought one of the larger units before the program even started and been using it religiously and love it. I think I started around the end of April and I had one of those smaller green bins and I actually just filled it. So, you know, that's a significant savings in the dump site or however you want to word it. Given the fact that there's 110 people on the waiting list and I hear a lot of positive comments about it from people that have seen it but weren't able to get one, I think it's definitely worth the 100 and we will, you know, in a perfect world, 7,000 is a target, but realistically, you know, whatever that number may be, if we do get to the 500 units, I think it will drive people to get further involved and totally support it.
For CJAI and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you, Ted. And now over to Brenda Little and Craig Foster, the Local Journalism Initiative team at CJPE County FM in Picton, with a report on the installation of a new electric vehicle charging station in Prince Edward County.
Hi, I'm Craig Foster, Local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJPE 99.3 County FM in beautiful Prince Edward County. Coming are some of the top stories from PEC. You can hear County FM news 5 days a week, six times a day on 99.3 County FM, the voice of the county, or stream us at 99.3countyfm.ca.
Prince Edward County is a hot tourist destination, and for owners of electric vehicles visiting the county, it has been disappointing and frustrating trying to find charging stations. The county announced that EV chargers are now installed and operational at three locations. The Level 2 chargers on the Flow Network can be found at the Crystal Palace parking lot, which is on Main Street just inside the fairgrounds in Picton, the Bloomfield parking lot on Main Street in Bloomfield, which is also Highway 33 or Loyalist Parkway, and at the southeast side of the Lehigh Arena at the Wellington Community Center on Belleville Street in Wellington. The county will be working on the sites to include seating areas and additional signage that will consist of rules for charging. For example, charging sessions are limited to 4 hours. It typically takes 8 hours to do a full charge from empty, so the stations are meant for top-ups. For an easy charging experience, the county suggests that drivers become a Flow member and download the Flow app. If more detailed instructions are needed, the user can look on the Flow website. The chargers have been installed thanks to a grant from the Charge for Change program delivered by Earth Day Canada and funded by Aviva Insurance. Future plans include multiple charging stations across the county and the addition of DC Fast Level 3 chargers. For more information on the VEV chargers in Prince Edward County, visit the website thecounty.ca or email info@peckcounty.on.ca. For the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Brenda Little.
Thank you to Brenda Little and Craig Foster of CJPE County FM for that story. Up next, we have CFWN Local Journalism Initiative reporter Jeff Gard's recent story about the charitable efforts of Kingston Frontenac's forward, Ethan Miedema.
All right, I'm in Kingston. It's great to meet up with Ethan Miedema. Coburg, how you doing, Ethan?
I'm good, thanks. How are you doing?
Yeah, good to see you, and thanks for meeting up today. So, you know, you're in your second season now in Kingston. Part through way last year. How's your first full season in going in Kingston now?
Yeah, I've been here from the start of training camp versus last year when I was just traded here. So a little bit of probably easier to settle in and kind of be here from the start. And I think we've had a bit of a rocky start, just with lots of, some hot streaks and some cold streaks. But we want to keep riding this hot streak that we're on right now. And yeah, I'm really, excited for the future with this team.
Tell me about just being a third-year player. How do you feel like you progress over the years and, just settle more into the league as you get older?
Yeah, I'd say, the league definitely gets, as you become older, the league becomes younger just because you're playing against guys more your age versus multiple years older. So I don't think the league gets easier, but I think you just as a player get more experience. And I've said that in other interviews before. So, just gaining more experience. I've played lots of games and just taking different things in from different coaches. And I mean, now that we have Troy Mann, that guy's coached for 20 years almost now, and I think 13 years in the American League. So he knows what it takes to, progress guys to the next level. And that's, a big part of why we're doing so well right now.
Yeah, that must make a big difference. As you hope to move up to the professional ranks, to have someone coaching you, like you said, that's been at that level.
100%, yeah.
What's been the most noticeable change for you in that sense?
I'd say just like the specific details and, how we go about things on the ice. There's, for example, everyone comes in the morning and, there's a set time for working out, set time for meetings, and no one's late, everyone's on time, because we demand so much. And this group, like I said, it's an exciting time, and it starts with being prepared and with everyone being on time.
You were drafted by the Buffalo Sabres last year. How has it changed since then, going from all teams watching you to one team working with you?
Yeah, it's definitely different. Maybe a little bit less pressure, just in the fact that, you got, say, 32 teams looking at you, or however many there are last year, and versus, this year I'm drafted by the Sabres, and, the player development guy's down, quite a bit to see me, going out for food or just, talking about my games on the phone or sending me video clips. And it's just very beneficial, I find, just to, build kind of a starting relationship with which, hopefully lasts multiple years in the future.
Yeah. What was prospect camp like when you went there?
Yeah, it was great. I mean, you see guys that are dominating the World Juniors that were, at that camp and were there, like Kulich, Savoy, and Oslin. Those guys were all at, camp. And just to, see those guys on the ice, they're legit and, going to be National League players one day. And some guys have already made their debuts. So, not that I'm best friends with those guys, but just to see them on the ice and, skate with them was definitely fun.
And then you went to main camp as well, so what an experience that must have been.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you move up even further with guys like Tage Thompson and Dylan Cousins, Jeff Skinner, Darlene, Levi as a goalie. There's so many, young pieces and talent, middle style. Like, I could keep going on. And
a lot of great young players.
Yeah, exactly. A team that's up and coming. And that's what I said the same, whereas, Buffalo, you know, they're an up-and-coming team and, you know, a team that is, you know, very hungry and, you know, is eventually wanting to win a Stanley Cup.
In Kingston now, you know, we've talked about your family a lot, but what's it like to be just even that much closer than Windsor was? And you must get a lot of visits from family to your games.
Yeah, I would say my family's down. I see them at least 3 times a month, probably, compared to once a month, if that, when I was in Windsor. So it's definitely nice seeing my brothers, just because, you know, I'm a bit of a role model for them, just because they're both younger. And, you know, my mom and dad, I see them much more, and my grandparents and my family, like you said. But yeah, closer to home. But at the same time, I had great billets in Windsor, and I have great billets in Kingston that both, you know, get me whatever I need. You know, if they're going to the grocery store, they'll ask what I need. And that's one of the biggest things. I think billets really make or can break sometimes, you know, your time, and not necessarily break it, but it's just, it's really beneficial when you have billets that are on the same page and can really, I guess, help you out in any way they can.
Charitable work as well. Talk about Meetama's mission this year, and that's so near and dear to you, and just talk about what you're doing.
Yeah, you know, my parents have done literally everything for me. Like, I wouldn't be nowhere near where I am today, let alone be even in hockey. So, you know, the time, effort, money is really, you know, like, I see it all, and I think not many kids do, and I think it's something that maybe sometimes people take advantage or really just don't really see, and it's a privilege to, you know, I played AAA for however many years, and then obviously now playing in the OHL, and just for them getting me to this point, and hopefully even further, is a, you know, it's something that, for my mom, at least, I can give back to a little bit, just because, like I said, she's done so much for me, and the littlest, this is just, you know, a little sample size that I can give back to her, and, you know, hopefully something that can put a smile on her face, and, you know, that she appreciates, you know, that I see her winning her battle, and just, like I said, a little sample size that I can give back to her.
Yeah, so you're raising money for breast cancer, right? Yeah. And she went through that.
Yeah, raising money for breast cancer and, you know, doing little things in the community, whether it's, I think there's going to be some survivors at some games pretty soon. Lots of people from the Cancer Society around. You know, we've done some auctions with jerseys, sticks, just, you know, given kind of, you know, like just stuff that would be in a raffle with tickets. And yeah, so made lots of money off that. And then the cancer jerseys that, you know, all the team wore on October 29th or 8th, I think, and or 7th. Yeah, just little things like that that, you know, add up, and every little bit counts.
Yeah, your mom, Amy, just how inspirational was it to watch her go through that? Tough as well, but inspirational to see her go through that.
Yeah, like I said in another interview, like I've been, she's been 11 years cancer-free in November that just passed. So I would have been only 7 or 8 around that time. So I don't remember it all, but I was old enough to understand and know what that process was kind of about. And like I said, just it's inspirational, kind of like you said as well, just with her going through that and winning her battle. And some people do, some people don't, and it's you know, it's amazing, and there's not any words you can put into it when they beat it and when they don't. It's the same thing. It's really unfortunate, and you know, it sucks for people that have to go through that, because, you know, cancer, it's out of your control, and it's something that, you know, it just, it sucks in life, and no one wants to be known or seen going through that process, because, like I said, it really sucks.
Well, it's great that you're giving back, and thanks so much for taking the time to speak with me today.
Yeah, no problem.
Again, that was my interview with Coburg's Ethan Meetama of the OHL's Kingston Frontenacs. I'm Jeff Gard for Northumberland.
And thank you to Jeff Gard of CFW and in Coburg for that report. Now over to Jesse Bell for the CFRC Environment Canada Weather Report.
Thank you, Dinah. This is Jesse Bell with the Environment Canada Weather Report for the Kingston region. The winter weather has arrived in Kingston and the surrounding areas, with a great volume of snow dropping in the last 7 days. For Thursday, January 18th, there was some snow throughout the day, high of -5, and it's going to drop to a low of -10 overnight. Friday, January 19th, 30% chance of flurries, high of -9, and an overnight low of -16. Saturday, January 20th, same 30% chance of flurries, same very low overnight temperature of -16. Moving into the end of the weekend, Sunday, January 21st, things will warm up just a bit. It's going to be sunny with a high of -6 and an overnight low of -8. And at the start of the next week, we are going to see a slight increase in temperatures as Monday, January 22nd, will be cloudy, but a little bit warmer at -3 with an overnight low of -4. And Tuesday, January 23rd, it will be right around zero, but there will be a 60% chance of flurries. This concludes your Environment Canada weather report, throwing it over to Danielle Draper from CFRC for the concert and events calendar.
On the 18th, Queen's Musical Theatre kicks off their rendition of The Prom, a new Broadway musical comedy. The show starts at 7:30 p.m. at the Rotunda Theatre in Theological Hall. Tickets are $20 for adults and $17 for students and seniors. They can be purchased via Queen's Musical Theatre Instagram page. Moving on to the 19th, Ian Garner joins us at Robert Sutherland Hall for a discussion on his most recent book, Z Generation, Into the Heart of Russia's Fascist Youth. This event is entirely free and takes place from 12 to 1 p.m. On January 20th, we have a free astrophysics talk and observatory tour. This event, starting at 7:30 p.m. at Ellis Hall, is free and open to all ages. Also on the 20th, from 1 to 3 p.m. at Yellow House, is Queen's BIPOC Talk. This week's session will focus on acknowledging self-worth through jewelry making. Are you a trans, non-binary, genderqueer, genderfluid, or any other non-cisgender person who wants a safer place to swim and also meet other students and wider trans community members? Join us on the 21st at 2:30 p.m. for a solidarity swim at the Arc Pool. This event is free and open to the wider Kingston community. For more information and to register, visit gogalesgo.ca. And now moving into our concerts for the week. The 18th, Blue Martini will be hosting Royal Jam Open Mic Night starting at 9 p.m. Over at the RCHA Club, Michael K. Myers will be performing both covers and originals. Doors open at 7 p.m. with a $5 entry fee. Over at the Mansion, we have numerous bands performing, including Paperbag Princes, Carnelian, and Revst. Doors open at 8 p.m. with just a $5 entry fee. On the 19th, we have Kiwi Jr. performing with special guest Girl Dad at the Grad Club. Doors open at 7:30 p.m. with the concert starting at 8:30. Tickets are $30 and can be purchased online at eventbrite.ca. At the Mansion, Dupo will be performing his first headlining show with support from Hartman. Tickets are $10 and the show starts at 8 p.m. We'll have many live solo performances happening on the 19th, including Bruce McElroy at the Royal Tavern, 4:30 p.m., the Garvin Brothers at the Toucan at 10 p.m., and Scott Owen at Creekside Bar and Grill at 6 p.m. All these performances are free of cost. On January 20th, the Embassy Live Music Cafe presents Abbey Stewart Band at 7 p.m. Also on the 20th, head over to the Mansion to party with your favorite new and old pop, punk, and emo songs. The event starts at 8 p.m. and admission is $5. On January 21st at 2:30 p.m., pianist Janina Fielkowska will be performing at the Isabel Bader Center, and tickets can be purchased at their website. There will be two karaoke nights on the 21st, one at the Royal Tavern at 8 p.m., and one at the Toucan at 10:30. Both events are free of charge. This has been Danielle with your concert and events calendar.
Thank you so much, and that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit cfrc.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter at CFRC. Thank you for tuning into The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. We'll see you next time. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.